Hello and welcome to Card Knock Life, episode 116. I'm Corey, and here's Daryl.
Yo!
And we've got a lot to talk about today. I often start the podcast with that because there's really no shortage of things to talk about on this roller coaster that is Magic the Gathering. It feels like every week there's a new set being spoiled or some huge event that just happened.
How about both?
It keeps us busy. Yeah, and today we've got both. And on top of that, I just found out IHOP is changing their name to IHOB, H-O-B. You know what that B stands for?
Breakfast.
Burgers. It stands for burgers. Can you believe that?
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not kidding you. Temporarily, International House of Burgers. I think they plan to go back to IHOP later on. But
why aren't they just the International House of Breakfast?
That makes a lot of sense.
Because when I saw IHOB, because somebody made some noise about this on my Facebook, I was like, oh, so now they're just the International House of Breakfast. Sick.
Yeah, that would be fine, but no burgers. Entirely different focus. And this is maybe to let you know that they also serve burgers, because you know you only go there in the morning for breakfast, and I think maybe their 6 o'clock shifts are a little light.
Yeah. Run a little light, yeah.
So there you go. See how quickly we can derail this podcast? Done.
What is that? 1 minute in? Got
him. Not even. Anyways, let's talk about the SCG Con, which I didn't talk to anyone about the experience of the event. I haven't really heard much about how it went down, but I'm guessing that it went down similarly to just about every other Star City Games event. They're not new to this tournament organizing thing, so they know what they're doing. It sounds like people had a lot of fun. The first ever large scale Pauper tournament was played at this. There was a Pauper Classic. The Invitational went on. Daryl tells me that one player played both a standard and a modern deck, so the results may vary a little bit, but we've got some stuff in there to kind of get out of that. And then on top of that, no ban list modern, which is particularly interesting to me, which we'll talk about all three of those and probably just forego the whole standard discussion because it's not super interesting right now.
Yeah, we'll spare you standard because standard, and I will spare you legacy and vintage because you guys probably don't care much about those. If you do, feel free to email us, and I'll record some offshoot thing about the duel for duels and about the Power 9 Classic.
Daryl will do 15 minutes of solo riffing on standard results, recorded from the seat of his car on the way to work tomorrow morning.
I'm off this week. I'm moving, actually.
Okay.
That's right. I will record it from the seat of my computer, which I'm currently sitting in.
So the listeners at home have something to look forward to after you've moved. They will no longer hear the rest of your family in the background of the podcast, which is totally cool and I totally understand. But every once in a while, there's the sound of dinner being made and whatnot. So,
hey, man. Sometimes dinner's got to be made. And I'm probably going to be – it's an open floor plan, so it's probably going to be right in front of the kitchen anyway.
Oh, is it really? Okay.
People are going to get the family life. That's what's up. You just don't get the ambulances and motorcycles anymore. We're not going to have a road next to
us. Oh, I'm going to miss that.
Dude, that's what's up.
I like the random plane crashing into the... it sounded like they were smashing right into your apartment, but...
I'm a mile away from the airport, so it wouldn't be unreasonable to think that.
Oh, okay. Well, if we have time, which I hope we do, I plan to talk about this. There was a lot of Core Set 19 happening today, too. So we got a big dump of information for Core Set 19. We're not going to get anything more. At least the plan is for us not to see anything more until GP Vegas next weekend, or this coming weekend, I should say. And then after that, the official spoilers that will be given to the content creators will be on the 18th of June. They'll begin on the 18th of June. That set is coming out in just about 3 weeks right now. It's right around the corner.
Well, I have to buy a box of it to get the good buy a box promo that I want.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that for sure. That'll be priority number one with that conversation. So anyways, let's just mention that we are sponsored by ManaTraders.com, which I have used extensively in the last 24 hours. I know you have as well.
Yeah.
This Teamer Liquid Metal plan, man, I took some of those ideas to heart, and I've built a deck that uses Liquid Metal coding and Saheeli Rai combos and War of Invention and Ancient Grudge and whatnot. And I have to say, honestly, it's not very good, but it's a hell of a lot of fun.
I feel like it can't be particularly good. But nothing against deck building skills, Corey. I think you're just fighting an uphill battle.
Yeah, I'm doing everything I can with this one. And it's fun when you win with the combo, and you can get some cool locks because it's an Ensnaring Bridge deck.
That's a nice direction.
But it's pretty crazy. I mean, it's like an artifact toolbox deck, basically. So yeah. I've got, like, the 5-mana Teferi and stuff to, like, search out, like, one of artifacts, like, Tezzeret. God, I did that again.
Yeah,
Relic of Genesis and Pirate Spellbomb and whatnot for, you know, whatever needs you have.
So, okay.
Anyways, I will refine that a little bit more, and I'll be posting CKL plays this week with that deck. Yeah. But let's talk about SCG Con, Star City Games Con. Oh, I neglected to say, by the way, Card Knock Life Podcast has a promo code for you. Card Knock Life, one word at checkout, gets you 14% off your Mana Trader subscription. That's the important stuff.
Is that a permanent 14? Because it was like the first 4 months or whatever.
First 4 months, yes. I'm sorry, first four months.
I was like, did it become permanent? Because it's so baller.
Well, 4 months is a long time. Then you start a new subscription, you use the promo code again.
I feel like they would catch on when you use the same thing.
All right. Anyways, no ban list modern. Let's start with this.
All right, no ban list modern. What are you gonna talk about?
Daryl, have you seen the results for this already?
I have not.
Okay, before you look at the results, I would say that the results point predominantly in the direction of one deck. Now, it wasn't completely dominated by this one deck, but it is telling that all of these players who basically have no information to go on kind of resulted with the same plan.
All right. So there's like three or four things that I see that stood out to me that I was like, these are insanely powerful, and I expect them to be a thing.
Uh-huh.
The first one is like something with Skullclamp. Elves would be my guess. Because you have Skullclamp and Glimpse of Nature and Green Sun Zenith. I feel like there's an Elves deck there somewhere that just blows people out of the water and turn to agree.
Okay, I will neither confirm nor deny until you've...
So the second thing is Hypergenesis.
Okay.
Because like cascading the big dumb idiots is a thing that people like to do. And there are some people that just can't play fair. So, Hypergenesis.
Mm-hmm.
Third thing I would expect is some sort of countertop strategy. Pretty Miracles looking. I mean, you're missing Force of Will, but you have Mental Misstep. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that bridges the gap. And then the third thing is, or the last thing is, like some sort of Chalice of the Void deck. Because now you have a better way to power down in turn one with Chrome Box. And there, you know, it basically invalidates people's Mental Missteps because people are going to be playing that card and like playing a bunch of Ponders and Preordains and stuff like that because people like blue cards. I don't know if that Chalice of the Void deck is going to involve Eldrazi Temple. I don't know if that Chalice of the Void deck is going to involve like a bunch of Chrome Boxes and like Tezzeret, the 4-mana Tezzeret. I don't know what's going to happen, but I feel like Chalice of the Void is a player.
Okay. Well, since the event already happened, I'll tell you how this actually went down. You're pretty close, Daryl, in some respects. But those two predicted cards, Hypergenesis and Pith in Skullclamp, really did not show up at all.
Wow.
And somehow we've got 25 decks. I don't know why we end up with 25. That's an odd number, but we do. We have that posted online.
Right.
And the most played strategy for the event was Eldrazi. Now, we've had a lot of broken stuff go on in Modern over the years. You know, you can point back to, like, the Pod days and, questionably, the Splinter Twin decks and things like that. There were some cards that were banned even before they had the chance to see play in Modern, but Eldrazi was very much a Modern deck during what we know as Eldrazi Winter. Now, this top 8, here you go. First place, Colorless Eldrazi, which is basically the Eldrazi aggro decks that made up Eldrazi Winter, plus Umezawa's Jit.
Oh.
Second place, Miracles, okay. Brian Brown doing, and he maxed out. He wins the award for playing the most banned cards in his deck. Dig Through Time, Mental Misstep, Ponder, Preordain, and Sensei's Top. Playing like a Monastery Mentor, Snapcaster, Jace, Miracles
deck. I'm looking at this Miracles deck, and there's something that I find extremely questionable.
What's that?
Why is there only one Terminus?
Oh, I don't know. How can you even begin to explain this format at this point?
I mean, you're right. How can you begin to explain it? But I'm just staring at the numbers, and I just don't understand how he got to exactly one Terminus. Like, it feels like Terminus is something you just want to play a bazillion of. of.
Yeah.
Because one mana Wrath of Gods are insane.
Yeah, with top in your deck, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's a card availability thing. It's Brian Brown doing.
I mean, yeah, it's not card availability. Brian has these old beat-up tops and counterbalances. Like, he definitely owns these cards.
Yeah.
So it's not that. I'm trying to understand. I guess because you can't put it back with Brainstorm, you just don't want to play a bunch of them. So you play two Supreme Verdict and one Terminus? I don't know.
All right, moving on. I'm going to just go through the top eight. I don't think we can really gain much from really digging into these too hard. But interesting to note, third place, Black-Green Depths, which is Vampire, Hexmage, Dark Depths deck.
Best Fiend Stage.
Has Chrome Mox and Mental Misstep as well. Yeah,
Best Fiend Stage,
right. And then fourth place, more Eldrazi, Colorless Eldrazi. Fifth place, Black-Green Depths. Sixth place, White Eldrazi, which is basically like Eldrazi and Taxes with Umezawa's Jit and the Eye of Ugin's. Seventh place, Eldrazi Post, which is Cloud Post, Eye of Ugin, Mental Misstep, Umezawa's Jit. Kind of like Eldrazi Tron, right? Plays four Chalice of the Void. And then eighth place, Colorless Eldrazi. And then just outside of the top eight, Colorless Eldrazi in ninth and tenth as well. Now, the most played banned card this weekend was I would think so too, but it was Mental Misstep because it just slots into like every deck. Yeah,
because the Black Green Depths want Mental Misstep, all the blue decks want Mental Misstep. Because Black Green Depths is the only way to really kill their guy is to kill it with Swords to Plowshares. I'm not surprised. I'm surprised that I missed Dark Depths. Like, that's a magic card.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a magic card. I mean, just looking at like one of these black green, I just picked a random one. Four Bob, four Hexmage, four Dark Depths, needle for like Field of Ruin, I guess, and Liliana. Abrupt Decay, Dismember, Misstep, Stirrings, Inquisition, Into the North, Scrying, and Thoughtseize. With a bunch of different sideboard cards. Not as many Life and Wombs as I expected to see.
Yeah.
These Black Depths decks. I expected them to have Life in the World.
Oh, but Dark Depths, a Snowland. I see.
Yeah, Into the North.
I have no idea.
Bananas.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, wow. Dark Depths is a Snowland. So you just like turn one Into the North, your Dark Depths. Turn two, play Vampire Hexmage and kill them. It's real dumb.
Yeah, for those that don't know, Into the North is a rampant growth for any Snowland. So it doesn't have to be a basic land. Where, you know, like in Modern, we don't really have access to any like snow lands that are super relevant. Now we've got snow rules. What?
There are snow lands that tap for two colors, one to play tap. There's Mouth of Ronob, Scrying Sheets.
Yeah, those are the two big ones. Mouth of Ronob and Scrying Sheets. So without Dark Depths though, you know, there's not a lot
that would be worth utility. It's not that bad if there's no Dark Depths, but with Dark Depths, it's real dumb.
I've been playing Green-White Company for a while, and I put the Moth of Ronum in that deck, because when you've got an Either Reliquary, I don't know if you talked about this on the podcast, but I've been having some fun with that. And then in Scred, obviously Scrying Sheets gets played in that deck, along with the plethora of snow-covered basics that the deck plays. Snow is always an interesting concept to me. It seems like something like it's just so easy to include basic lands that have the snow quality that it's like, you know, if you wanted to run Scred in a red deck, you just do it, right? Like, if you're playing two colors, then you get caught a little bit with like the shock lands and stuff, but even like having like three or four snow basics in play, like on a two color deck, that's doable. Yeah. Apparently the incentive isn't there enough to do such a thing because there maybe isn't enough else to do with it. Scrying Sheets is just so subtly beneficial to you. It's like, okay, might as well, you know?
Yeah, Scrying Sheets and Into the North are like your payoffs, air quotes.
Yeah.
But there's not really much to it. Like, I've just been playing them for get basics with different names for Gifts and Given, because that is a thing you can actually do. Because the game looks at Snow Covered Island as two different things. So you can gifts for four basics against the Blood Moon or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think the storm decks do too. They put like a snow island and a snow mountain for their Gifts and Given.
Oh, yeah, right, because they have gifts. Yeah.
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 So something I think you'll see with Gifts and Given is like splits between snow and regular basics.
Yeah. Speaking of Storm, that's another deck that I would expect to see a lot of in this No Banlist Modern, because there's a lot of Storm cards that are not allowed in Modern right now. Rite of Flame and Seething Song are big ones. Treasure Cruise would also be great. So shout out to Dylan Kirkpatrick, who was in what place here? 16th place, thank you. He actually, I believe, in this 25 decks that we're looking at, probably maximized the banned cards in his deck. He's got Chromox, Git Probe, Mental Misstep, Ponder, Preordain, Rite of Flame, Seething Song, and Treasure Cruise. And this no ban list version of the Storm deck does not play the Gifts Pass in Flames type of package. It does have Pass in Flames, of course, but it's a Pyromancer Ascension version of the deck instead.
I kind of would like Gibson Given without the creatures, because Gibson Given just gives you enough stuff to do.
Yeah.
But it might just be the Treasure Cruise is just better, but Treasure Cruise eats your whole graveyard. So, like, you want to be, like, casting all these spells instead of eating your graveyard. You just want to, like, gifts for like, Past and Flames and three rituals, and then laugh your opponent out of the building.
Yeah. Now, this one doesn't play the mana reducers, though, too. He doesn't have any creatures in the deck.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not concerned about the mana reducers. I just don't know if Treasure Cruise... So, like, Treasure Cruise is better than Gifts in the, like, black-green matchups, but you're still, like, it looks like, for this deck, the biggest resource is its graveyard. So, like, the problem with that is, with four Pyromancer Ascension and three Treasure Cruise, like, your graveyard in two different directions. So, I feel like, to enable your Pyromancer Ascension, I'd just rather play Gifts.
Sure, sure.
And kind of go off that way. But that's just me. I'm not a Storm Wizard by any stretch of the imagination.
Storm Wizard sounds like something you would be as a class in an old Final Fantasy game.
Yes.
All right. Shall we move on from this? This was a cool event. I hope that they do more of it.
Yeah, nothing really too exciting.
Yeah, I'd like to play in one of these one day, but they're... It's kind of a weird thing because some of the banned cards are actually kind of expensive due to their, like, playing Legacy and stuff. So if you want to throw together a deck for this, it's like you're going to really have to shell out.
But, I mean, I would just play Miracles.
Yeah, but... I think I would too. That looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
So where do you want to go next?
Yeah, let's go to the Standard, Invitational.
We got more Modern, we got the Invitational, we got Legacy, Vintage, Pauper. Where do you want
to
go?
Let's go to the Invitational, which... Right. Interesting. I don't think I've ever seen an event that has this kind of format. Do all the invitationals work like this with Standard and Modern?
Oh, yeah. No, this has just been a thing. This Star City Invitational has been like this forever.
All right.
Yeah,
I haven't paid much attention to
this. I played in, like, three of these. They were actually super sweet to play.
Yeah. So with the, like, even with, like, the team events where you have multiple formats being played by different players, like, you know, the results get a little bit bastardized. Like, we're looking at the top eight, which represents Modern, because that's the last format that was played by these players. However, their Standard record might be quite a bit better than their Modern record. So, though Infect surprisingly won this event in the hands of Aaron Barrick, I don't know that his Modern record was really all that great. So
you can actually check that out if you go to the coverage itself of the Invitational. It has... they do, in the Invitational, they do metagame breakdowns of 7 and 1 or better Standard and Modern decks.
Okay.
So let me open those up for us real quick, because I think that'll be more the information you're looking for. Standard decks, we don't care. Modern decks. So we got Michael Hamilton on Black Red Hollow 1, Aaron Barrick on Infect, 7-1 or better. So,
okay, all right.
Cool. Tristan Fox on Mardu Pyromancer. Dan Gillette on Mono Green Tron. Nanori Hoshide on Jund. Kazu Negri on Jeskai Control. Jonathan Sukunik on Jeskai Control. Evan Whitehouse, Mono Green Tron. I got another Modern Pyromancer. So two Trons, two Pyromancers. Two Jeskai Control.
Do you see Gerard Jund. Fabiano in there?
He did not go 7-1 or better in Modern. Let me see if he went 7-1 or better in Standard. Because, like, usually 6-2, 6-2 is close to good enough. Fabiano 7-1 or better in Standard.
Okay. All right. Well, let's look at this Infect deck, because this is kind of an odd deck. Like, first of all, we haven't seen Infect for a long time, ever since Fatal Push was printed and Gitaxian Probe got banned. There was a time where Infect was everywhere. It was, like, hands down the best deck. But lately, it's kind of been creeping back online, and I think it's just purely because people are kind of forgetting about it. You know, you're not seeing a lot of opposing spell skites go around, which basically does a hell of a job to interrupt the pump spells that the infect player wants to play. But what Aaron Barrick did, which is kind of interesting, is he plays a straight up infect deck main board, and then game two, where your opponent is able to kind of respond to, you know, the infect problem, he's like, okay, we're going to go into a totally different plan, and Geist of St. Traft is just going to start clocking you in the jaw. Deal with that. So all of those, like, bolts and fatal pushes and things that you want to use against this deck are invalidated by the Hexproof Spirit that's going to be coming at you.
Yeah, and then you have all these pump spells to make Geist an actual clock.
Yeah, man, I love that. I think that's great. So
you have to do is hit him with Mind of Wolcrows in your main phase, and you've got, you know, 10 power.
This is pretty cool. We haven't seen any innovation from this deck for a long time.
It's like, this is actually just brilliant, because, like, a lot of people will play Infect against Infect and lose game one to, like, Glistener Elf or whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, you'll go, like, Fetch Shock Thoughtseize, Fetch Shock, play your thing, go to, like, 14 or whatever. And then if you don't Thoughtseize and see a Geist on turn one, you're just, there to go, like, turn three Geist, and you're just like, well, I'm at 12, and this is a deck full of pump spells, so crap.
Yeah, yeah. Geist is something you have to be very well prepared for to deal with, particularly when he's got a full four in the sideboard. Like, he is going to see a Geist, you know? He's going to resolve a Geist against you. And if you don't play counter spells, that's, like, the mark of death in this case, you know?
Yeah, because usually how people beat Geist is by blocking. But, like, you're not blocking Geist in this deck. I mean, you're going to chump. You're going to block a Geist like a Snapcaster.
Yes.
You're just going to cast Becomements and make it a 4-4, and then you're just like, well, can't kill your Snapcaster, or can't kill your Geist. Guess I'm dead. Yeah. Like, you're going to get one, maybe two shots at it. And, like, he's going to have a pump spell for it. So, this is terrifying looking, and it's not particularly enjoyable to play against. So, I'm surprised that there's not more Shaper Sanctuary floating around the main board. I see two in the sideboard. But this deck seems like the spot where you want to be Shaper Sanctuary. Because usually you just ride one threat, your opponent tries to kill it a bunch. So, like, you get to play this game where, like, your opponent targets your thing with Shaper Sanctuary. Well, Sanctuary, you draw a card, you cast a pump spell or a protection spell, and they try and target it again, and you draw a card. And so you're just, like, basically drawing through your deck because they're trying to kill your thing. And it works even better, I think. How is this working? Whatever the creature control against target spell. So, fun news here. If you have Shaper Sanctuary in play and you have a Spell Sky, they target your Infect guy, you redirect the Spell Sky, you get to draw two cards.
Oh, really?
Because it's whenever a creature is a target.
Becomes a
target. So, the Infect creature becomes the target, and then you redirect the Spell Sky, and the Spell Sky becomes the target. You get another card.
Yeah, yeah. My guess with that, Daryl, is that the Shaper Sanctuary is good in the matchups where Geist is also really good. And you've already packed four in your sideboard. You only commit so much space to that.
That's fair.
But, yeah, that's one of the few new cards that have been added to this deck list. Like, this is basically the same 75 minus the Taxing Probes and, you know, replaced by more of, you know, the protection spells and pump spells. Yeah. So, I wouldn't be surprised to see more of this. I think Aaron Barrick has kind of put it on the map. And once people start to recognize that Infect can take down an event like this, they're much more willing to pick it up. I'm okay with that. I love that. You know, from the perspective of a control player, this deck is not the worst matchup in the world. It's certainly got some draws where it's really difficult to beat. But if you're packing cards like Fatal Push these days, you should at least do fine against this deck game one. And now you've got to be aware of the fact that there's a potential Geist of St. Traft in the sideboard and keep in your Wrath of Gods and whatnot.
I mean, what you do usually, like, you just need enough things to kill their guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, like, it's a really fun matchup to play from the control deck side, because, like, there's always a lot of tension. There's a lot of, like, infect management. How much can I really afford to take? You know, are you bluffing them well enough? Are you timing your burn spells right? Things like that. It's actually a super fun matchup for the control side, too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so second place, Zach Elsick, Ironworks Combo, also known as KCI. Black Red Hollow One in third. I'm seeing more and more of this. I don't know if this was standardized prior to this event, but I'm seeing players in Black Red Hollow One play Lingering Souls in the main. Despite being a Black Red deck, they pitch the Lingering Souls with one of their discard spells and reanimate it for some blockers against, like, similar decks in the mirror.
Yeah.
They've also got access to white with one Sacred Foundry, and then it gives them Stony Silence, too.
Yeah, starts out real good.
So there's that. In Affinity, fourth place,
Ardu Pyromancer.
Now, does this Affinity deck have Karn? Yes, it does. All right, two Karn in the main deck. Scion of Urza.
Two Karn is becoming the standard, I think.
Yeah.
And then sideboard Aether Grids. Like, it's becoming pretty standard, I think.
Yeah. The Karn thing is really demoralizing from the perspective of a player who, like, wants to, you know, like, I just told you, I play control decks, right? So, yeah. With a control deck, like, you can usually get to that tipping point where it's like, if I have the right number of removal spells in this situation, I can be dealing with the threats as they get cast. And then there's, like, a Karn, and it's like, okay, now they're going to be drawing two cards a turn, and I can't go toe-to-toe with that, you know? That guy just creeps out of range very fast. He starts with 5 loyalty, goes to 6, puts a 6-6 into play off of a bunch of, like, really innocuous-looking artifacts that just, you know, accumulate value for the tokens. It's really... It's pretty awful.
Yeah. I'm not looking forward to playing games against Affinity where my opponent has cards on Urza.
Yeah.
But now that I've searched my deck a little bit to go back towards the blue white Tron deck, like I'm like, okay, sure, here's an Elesh Norn, go. Like,
yeah.
Elesh Norn, beat that, go. Like,
you know, I would say if there's a deck that you struggle with, there is like a Facebook group for every type of deck.
Yes.
That exists in Modern. And it's funny because I'm part of a few of those groups. I've joined like a Mardu Pyromancer group recently just kind of check in on what that deck's doing. But I don't play Mardu Pyromancer, right? So it's interesting to see like what problems the pilots in those decks are having. And from the perspective of a player playing a different deck, you know, you can kind of like see how you can exploit those things. And people have got some really clever solutions in like the green white like company and Court of Calling decks for dealing with like the Jeskai control decks, because those are really tough for those decks to beat. Historically, like Voice of Resurgence has been pretty good against control, but Jeskai just has that deck's number. So they're trying all sorts of wacky things, and I think it's good to kind of keep a leg up.
I'm just gonna call the best shot, which is, are they just playing Mark of Asylum?
No, they're not. I haven't seen that yet, but there's someone at my local event that played a Mark of Asylum in his deck. That was pretty cool.
I feel like that's how you beat Jeskai Control, because they have a bunch of burn spells, and you're just like, nope, go.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But it's pretty narrow, right? I mean, you can put that in against burn, I suppose. But
yeah, you bring it in against anything that plays Lightning Bolt.
But anyways, I'll keep moving here. 6th place, Green White Hexproof, Boggles, gross. 7th place, Jeskai Control, that's GFabs. We'll come back to that one in a second, but let me just close out here with Mono Green Devotion in 8th place, which we're seeing in top 8s every once in a while, kind of out of the blue. Like, this deck I didn't realize was a real thing, because it seems so fair, in you know, like, the modern terms of the word fair, but it's just a bunch of creatures, you know? Like, it generates a ridiculous amount of mana really fast off of Garrick untapping Nykthos and things, but it's quote-unquote fair, you know?
I mean, I like the double splash here. We've gotten so greedy that we went with the double splash. We said we can't beat decks that reduce our life total below zero, so we're going to splash Worship. And then we said we can't beat aggressive decks. So, like, all the sideboard cards are basically white and red.
Yeah, they
except
are.
For Walking Ballista. We've got some Blood Moon, some Ley Lines, some Rest in Peace, some Fracturing Gust, some Code Electric Turn, some Warship, and some Walking Ballista. Like, didn't want to lose to Affinity. 2 Warship, 2 Fracturing Gust, 2 Code Electric Turn.
Yeah.
Blood Moon for Tron. Like, yeah, this person's just all about it. Let's do the thing.
Fracturing Gust is so costly, but in a deck like this, you can ramp up to 5 pretty quickly. And when you do...
I mean, that's a turn 3 play.
Yeah, it also kills your Utopia Sprawls, though. Like, if you're ramping with Utopia Sprawl, that's kind of nombo.
I mean, it also just gains you life, though. Like,
it
when
does,
you kill
yeah. Them. It's pro- so, At I that mean, point, like, going backwards in mana is not the worst thing.
Yeah, I mean, kill your opponent's board, gain 12 life, lose your Utopia Sprawls. Sure, okay.
And you can kill your Oath of Nessus, which is, like, totally fine. You know,
yeah,
get 2 free life off of those.
Yeah, that's free money.
Yeah. But yeah, these decks look like a lot of fun. I'd like to put them together and give them a whirl. I think that purely going like Arbor Elf into turn 2 Blood Moon is just enough to win in some matchups. So like having access to like a sort of Ponza plan in game 2 is probably good enough, where you struggle in game 1. Beyond that, I just want to play Hornet Queen. Anyways,
I'm a fan of Rukhtar. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. Rukhtar. Ooh, that's another good one. Let's go to GFAB's Jeskai Control. A little bit unorthodox. But, Daryl, can you talk to us about what's in this deck?
Yeah, I got the list in front of me here. So I got 7 creatures. I got a Restoration Angel, 4 Snapcasters, 2 Clicks, 4 Planeswalkers, a Jace, a Karn, a Sion of Urza, a Jace the Mindsculptor. Yeah. 2 Teferi Hero of Dominaria, 24 lands with 3 Colonnades, no Field of Ruins, 3 Cryptic, 4 Bolt, 2 Helix, 2 Logic Knot, 3 Path to Exile, 1 Secure the Waste, 3 Search for Escanta, 4 Seeing Visions, 2 Supreme Verdict, and Timely Reinforcements. And then the sideboard is a Relic of, or an Engineer Explosives, 2 Relic of Genesis, 2 Blood Moon, a Rune Halo, a Celestial Purge, 2 Ceremonious Rejection, 2 Dispel, 2 Negate, a Lyra Dawnbringer, and a Timely Reinforcements.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta respect Gerard's ability to just be like, I know it's right, and I don't care that, you know, we have all these results before me saying that Restoration Angel is not a main deck card in this deck, or Karn doesn't belong in Jeskai Control. You know, he's just got these plans, and he's going to see them through, and he's going to just, whatever, top eight an Invitational with it.
Yeah.
So, that's pretty cool. I love Restoration Angel.
I mean, it's all right. Like, Restoration Angel, like, so he's basically built his deck to have this, like, mini beatdown package.
Yeah.
So that against the combo decks, he can go, like, click, and the Restoration Angel, blink my click, target you again, have this, like, Air Force, use my burn spells to kill you. So he's kind of, like, trying to give himself that route. He makes himself the aggro and the Jeskai Control mirrors, because he does have the extra creatures.
Yeah.
The one Karn seems kind of weird, because he doesn't have any artifacts in his deck, so he's just, like, he's just, like, trying to plus-minus it, which is fine, because I have so much loyalty that it just doesn't matter, like...
Is that the draw with this guy? Because I've played Karn, I've been severely underwhelmed. Not in this setting, but...
So, like, 6 loyalty is a whole lot of loyalty.
Yeah.
So, like, just being able to play this Planeswalker that's probably not going to die after you cast it, and then you just have this, like, plus-minus toggle that you can do...
Mm-hmm.
And then have this like card advantage that even if it's drawing you a land every turn, it's just drawing you another card. And if your opponent wants to stop you from drawing a bunch of cards, they have to invest so many resources into killing this card.
Yeah, that's fair. And he like basically spits out pack rats in this deck, right? Because they don't count anything else. But if you plus on one turn in the next 3 turns, you're gonna like poop out an artifact creature.
Yeah, so I mean, power. You can make some pack rats, like, in the control matchups, if you land the Karn, you can tick it up high enough. If it's they're not playing bolts, you can just, like, make some pack rats and make them have it. But, yeah, I just see this guy as another, like, cantrip. Like, another, like, I would like to play a third Teferi and can't. So, you can't reasonably play a third Teferi in this deck. So, you play Karn.
Sure. I don't know. I think the guy, it's weird that its biggest asset to the deck is just the fact that it has lots of loyalty. You know, like,
yeah
the card draw is great, but Jace is infinitely more useful with Brainstorm.
It's also easy to cast.
That's fair, yeah. I mean, yeah, if you don't have access to 2 blue sources by turn 4, then you're losing anyway, right? You're a Cryptic Command deck.
Yeah, you're in trouble, but I mean, it's the matter of it's just easy to cast. Like, if your opponent Blood Moon 2, you can, like, start to try and dig for your Blood Moon Elves, you know?
That's true.
If you're not prepared for it.
Or you just make some creatures and attack. Sometimes when your opponent plays Blood Moon, they're, you know, they're committing a card to it that they don't have, you know, like, something more threatening to do with.
Yeah.
And, you know, they might get caught too. But, you know, speaking of that, as an out to Blood Moon, and that seems totally relevant for this, by the way, I've thought about Chandra, Fire of Cal or Torch of Defiance, whatever the latest Chandra is, in like a Jeskai Control deck. Have you ever considered that? And if so, why is it not a thought in Jeskai
Control? Because you can't play counter spells with it.
Okay, yeah.
So Chandra basically invalidates your ability to play counter spells. Because here's what happens. And I played Blue Moon with a pair of Chandras for a while, and it was horrible. Because, like, you would plus Chandra and flip over a Cryptic Command, and you're just like, well, I want to cast this and draw a card, but I don't want to spend 4 mana on my turn.
Right, you don't want to tap out. That's fair.
I'd rather have this Cryptic in my graveyard so I can snapcast it later. So, like, I have to pick between 4-mana, draw a card, bounce a permanent, or shocked.
Yeah, that's totally irrelevant. I suppose the spells that you're going to be seeing off the top of your deck are really not all that appealing. Best case scenario, you get, like, a Lightning Helix, and it's like, you could do the 2 damage anyway just by not casting it, or you tap on and off for it. Yeah,
yeah, but you'll...
So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's worth considering, though. Like, it's a much faster clock than a lot of the other Planeswalkers, where it's, like, ticking up and shocking them every turn. But,
right, so, like, here's the key. It's the problem is that you're not giving yourself the option to draw the card if you're getting a shock.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you like, are forced to pick modally, and you don't actually get the card you want in a mode that you want. Because you might want a card, but you don't want to spend the mana on your turn to have it.
Right, right. Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, yeah, let's abandon that conversation. That's kind of sounded like a stupid question now that we think it through.
Yep.
No stupid questions. Just stupid people, as they say. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's that. That's the Invitational. We better talk just a little bit about the Pauper event. I'm no expert in Pauper. Do you play any Pauper, Daryl?
I do. I have foray. The local store here has a Monday night Pauper event that I try and just keep up with. I don't get to play it often because I'm recording this podcast.
I've got a deck. I never got to play it in paper yet. I played it online a little bit, but
yeah,
I'm looking for the opportunity to do so. And you know, we have the first major Pauper event, basically like promoted single-handedly by the professor of Tolarian Academy. I think it was kind of his idea to get this started in the first place.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm giving him any credit. But,
college.
When I say it, Tolarian Academy.
You did.
Yeah. It was won by a player, Kendra Smith, on Elves.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, 3 blue-red Delver decks, second, third, and fourth place.
So blue-red Delver is the best deck in the format. Like Brainstorm, Counterspell, Preordained Ponder, like, Gush, all that stuff's legal. Play some junky blue creatures and some Delvers.
Yeah.
So, like, the creatures are like 4 Delver, 4 Spellstutter Sprite, a couple of Ninja the Deep Hours, 4 Augur Bolas, 4 Fairy Miscreant. Oh, 4 Ninja, sorry. More than a couple.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, Fairy Miscreant's just like a 1/1 flyer that when it enters the battlefield, if you control another Fairy Miscreant, draw a card. So, like, Fairy Miscreant is like the way to enable your Spellstutter Sprites to be better counter spells. And then you also play 4 Counterspell. So, like, you just are just like... And then you get the best sideboard cards in the format, Hydro and Pyroblast. So it's just like, well, all right, this is what we're doing. We're just playing Delver.
Yeah.
Flip it.
Not to mention, they're hard to block, right? Fairy Miscreants, and then you Ninja the Deep Hours and Ninjutsu them into play and get to draw a card all over again.
Yeah, play stupid games, win stupid prizes. That's what I call this deck.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to play, though.
Yeah, so they split the top four because I actually follow someone who follows Kendra Smith online on Twitter.
Yeah.
And so they split. She ended up winning the trophy. Just playing the Blue Splash Elves. That is just an Elves combo deck that has 2 Distant Melody in it, which is draw a card, name a creature type, draw a card for each permanent you control over the type. So you just name Elves, you draw your whole deck, you put a bunch of Well Witchers and stuff in play, you just like, well, figure it out. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Otherwise, like, deck. So, like, if you can't keep up with a bunch of 1/1s, like, if you don't draw your electricaries, that makes it really hard. But yeah, Elves, triple blue red Delver, white red Monarch. It's like, that's basically, there's a 2/4. It's like a 4-mana 2/4. Palace Sentinels, it's a 4-mana 2/4 that gives you the Monarch. And then it's like 3-mana Inspector, Glint Hawk, Core Skyfisher, and then just a bunch of things that, like, draw you through your deck. You have, you know, a few burn spells and Galvanic Blast and Lightning Bolt. You have an Electricity, some Battle Screeches, and you're just trying to, like, cobble together damage and use the Monarch to, like, push yourself forward.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to our very own writer, Zach Goldman, in the top 8, 7th place, which is Blue-Black Control. Yeah, he's the Value Town enthusiasts on the website. Valueton Daddy, as many of them many people know him.
Oh, Waller, yeah. So yeah, but this Blue Black Control deck's pretty standard. The one soul manipulation is you can leave home without it if you choose to or not. But yeah, everything else looks pretty standard on that. And then as you kind of scroll down through the top 16, you see more things that are, you know, noteworthy or just normal. Mono Black Control. The Abzan Torture Existence deck is like an Abzan Dredge style deck that might be up your alley. More Elves of Mono Black. Inside Out Combo, which is a Tireless Tribe combo deck. I'll explain that in a second. And then Affinity, White Red Monarch, Blue Black Troll, Delver, and Mono Green Aggro. So the other two decks, Abzan, Torture Existence. There's a common, Torture Existence. Pay black, choose and discard a creature. Return target creature from the graveyard to your hand.
You should also mention that's an enchantment for one black, so you can do it as much as you want.
One black, activate as many times as you like.
Yeah.
And then it has cards like Grave Scrambler, which has Madness 2. So you can pay the one and a black to return a creature from your graveyard to your hand. Four Gregorian Groundscale, three Cryptorants, a Fume Spinner, an Oromancer, a Horror of the Broken Lands, which is the dude that pumps itself. Four Corsky Fisher, two Satan Wayfinder, a Stinkweed Imp, and a Tilling Tree Folk. So it's just trying to generically generate a lot of value off of this Torture Existence. Recurring Golgari Groundscale to gain some life, recurring the Gurmag Anglers and Horror of the Broken Lands to eventually kill you. It's got Corsky Fisher to bounce your Grave Scrabblers to be able to madness them and get a creature back. And
get
a creature back with Tortured Existence.
Cryptorants, so the best wrath spell in the format.
Yeah, Cryptorants is the best wrath spell. So the hard lock is having two Grave Scrabblers. So you discard your Grave Scrambler to Tortured Existence, you get back the other Grave Scrambler, it comes into play, you get back a creature, you figure out a way to kill your Grave Scrambler, and you just keep looping those two cards over and over and over again to your Tortured Existence. It kind of sucks if your opponent can figure out a way to exile them, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
And then just some normal Abzan cards with sideboard, Fairy Macabre, more Horrors if you need some beatdown.
Yeah, Fairy Macabre is really cool with this deck.
Yeah, Kresali Pride Mage and Standard Bearer as answers to like the heroic decks. Wicker Burrow Elder for Affinity. COP Red for Burn, Journey to Nowhere for creature decks, and Snuff Out again for creature decks. And then the other deck that is the fancy combo deck in the top 16 is Inside Out Combo. So there's a card called Tireless Tribe. It's just a white for a 1/1 that has the text discard a card. Tireless Tribe gets +0/+4 until end of turn. And there's a common from Eventide called Inside Out. Switch target creature's power and toughness until end of turn. Draw a card. So it's one and is it hybrid? So you cast Inside Out and you target Tireless Tracker. And that makes its power and toughness switch, and then every increase in its power and toughness also switches for the rest of the turn. So you don't have to commit to discarding five cards and then casting Inside Out to get blown out by like your Tireless Tribe dying.
Oh, is that just, right?
Yeah, that's how it works.
Okay.
So I got completely destroyed the first time I played against this deck because I was like, oh, Inside Out resolves, whatever. Like they have to like pump it before they do the thing, so they're not gonna kill me. And then they just discarded cards. Every time they discard a card on Moto, it just like ticked the power up. I'm like, that's not how this works. Wait a minute, that's weird. But like all of your like burn spells still now kill it because you have like trickeries and stuff. It has one toughness, and the toughness never goes up. So they do play a bunch of dispels and circular logics, which circular logic is a madness counter spell that counter target spell unless you pay one for each card in its controller in your graveyard. So like they discard all the cards and they circular logic you, and you have to pay 10. And you just get blown out by a counter spell.
Yeah. That's pretty sick.
Yeah.
This deck seems to really hinge on having a Tireless Tribe in play, though. And you're playing four Brainstorms to find it. You also got Dizzy Spell the Transmute for it.
So but, you have
Ponder, Preordained.
You have four Brainstorm, four Ponder, four Gitaxian Probe, a Preordained, and four Gut.
Yeah, that's so a lot of draw.
You can't find a Tireless Tribe. You've done something miserably wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the meta. No Tron decks is the other control deck, really. Just a bunch of sweet popper decks. It's exciting to see a big event with 120 people, event the size being played.
Oh, that's all? I thought it was bigger than that. I can't believe it.
That was 125 people.
Yeah. Huh.
I mean, that's bigger than most classics you'll get and stuff like that, depending on the format. It?
Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right, cool. Well, there's that. Popper's really cool. I think there's really no reason that we shouldn't have more of those events supported. Like, the Opens should start to host them. I don't know why they don't. You know, we need to have, like, some side events or something. But yeah. Maybe it's just the fact that we only got 125 people at this one. That was pretty hyped up.
I think there are Popper challenges.
Yeah.
But like, or not pop, yeah, pauper challenges, not pauper classes.
I've never seen one, but I would believe that there have been.
I can't remember if I've been, I can't remember if it was there recently. I thought it was, but.
Okay. Yeah, they ought to try that one time and see how that goes. But I've been wanting an opportunity to play my pauper deck. I've got Delver, I've got the mono blue Delver, and my good friend John gifted me for my birthday the From the Vault transformed Delver of Secrets. So I've got some really fancy Delvers in there to flip.
Get those out of here, dude. Regular Delver or bust.
No, they're cool. Anyways, let's go on to the Core Set 2019 previews for today.
Ooh.
On a totally different note. Now, I'm going to save the buy a box thing until the end because I think we're going to have a heated discussion about that probably.
I have a feeling we are.
But let's just put this out there. Blake Rasmussen on the Mothership posted some spoilers for the set, including the promos that you're going to receive for different different events. So the Open House weekend, which is June 30th, is where you bring a friend to play Magic for the first time. And you get a little intro pack along with a promo foil. And that is, in this case, Gutter Snipe. It's a full art Gutter Snipe. The art is really, really cool for this. And it's got an a Masters 25 looking stamp on it, which is basically the Planeswalk symbol with the 25 on it. I'm not sure why they chose this particularly. Maybe because it's the symbol for the 25th year of Magic. But that is exactly the set symbol for Masters 25, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, so that's a little confusing, I suppose, to players in some respects. But the M19 symbol is in its proper place. The watermark that I'm talking about is in the art of the card.
Yep.
Anyways, Gutter Snipe's in the format, or is in the set, I should say. As well as Draft Weekend, July 14th to 15th, we're going to be getting a card called Desecrated Tomb as a promo. And this card is, like, pretty interesting. I think it might see some play. 3 mana for an artifact. Whenever one or more creature cards leave your graveyard, create a 1/1 black bat creature token with flying. Is this not a possible, like, sideboard card for, like, modern Dredge decks who are dealing with, like, if there's a Nile Spellbomb that goes off against your graveyard, like, suddenly you have, you know, like, 5 bats?
Incorrect. You have 1 bat. It works the same way as the Gitrog Monster.
Oh, it says 1 or more. Oh, that's useless. Yeah.
It works the same way as the Gitrog Monster.
Yeah.
So if you know, creatures... So it's actually not useless. You can actually play it in Dredge because your landfall triggers. Every time a Blood Guest comes back, you get a bat. Every time Prize of Algum comes back out of your graveyard, you get a bat.
Yeah.
So it's every instance of something coming out of your graveyard one way or the other. So it's actually a playable card in Dredge because you can use it to front load some flyers. And then if somebody's favorite hit is like Relic of Drainage or Scavenge Ooze, you can slowly accrue bats as long as they're not, you know, breaking open the relic. If they're tapping it, you can accrue bats.
This kind of combos with your own Relic of Progenitus.
Yeah.
It's kind of neat. Sort of similarly to like Eternal Scourge, like the three of these could be best friends, you know?
Yes.
So, I don't know. I guess maybe there's some applications. Probably not in Dredge. I don't know if I could see the Dredge deck really wanting this. It's just more of the same. But maybe a one-of. I don't know. It's worth trying. It's cool. The art is cool. It looks very vintage, doesn't it? It's very like it looks like it came from Legends or something.
Yeah, it does.
And then on the Magic Leagues, July 16th, a fun way to grab a few packs and play smaller, quick, sealed games with friends at your local store or at home. Just for participating, you get a foil promo Reliquary Tower, which I don't know if you're aware, Reliquary Tower before this printing was about $5, $6, the regular uncommon version.
I'm aware.
This card right here, not only does it look fantastic, it's like a unique art in foil of a card that's already in high demand, so I can't imagine this would be a cheap pickup if you don't go to the league and get it that way.
Right, I want to buy more Reliquary Towers. Just plain old Reliquary Towers.
Yeah.
But they're $6 a piece. It's just like, well, nope. Pass. Okay.
Yeah, this one looks a little like the hut of Baba Yaga or something with the one chicken leg holding up. And then we've got the Store Champions coming up actually next weekend, which is technically Dominaria Store Champions, but if you participate, you get a Core Set 2019 promo card, which is also kind of a spoiler card. And that is going to be Demon of Catastrophes. That is a 2BB 6/6 creature demon. It is a rare. As an additional cost to play, you have to sacrifice a creature, and it has flying and trample. similar to Desecration Demon, which took apart Standard during the Mono Black Devotion days.
Yeah.
But potentially better. I mean, the fact that you can always be attacking with this guy is far far superior to the opportunity for your opponent to put plus one counters on it. I think the drawback is huge.
No. Sack of creatures. Especially with the token decks that exist, like...
Yeah, Flying Cash, Trample.
Cash token in for a Flying Trample creature. Yeah, deal.
Yeah. I think more important to me in this part of the announcement is the playmat that you get for being the champion of that event. It is, like, really sick looking. It's a dragon. Looks like Nicol Bolas, actually.
Yeah.
And super colorful. Man, I think I'm going to have to start playing Standard to go to this event and hopefully take one of these
plays. It is Nicol Bolas, by the way.
Oh, it is Nicol Bolas. Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, I would guess. I haven't seen the mat, but there are multiple cards with Nicol Bolas' art or quotes on them. Okay. So I guess the dragon would be Nicol Bolas.
All right, yeah, he's got some crazy horns going on. So I would expect Nicol Bolas to be showing up in this set as well. Maybe a Planeswalker?
Maybe.
All right, and then we've got the Friday Night Magic event promos, which I don't know if you've done any F&M events in the last couple of months since they started doing the ops, but I've got a few of those guys lying around. In fact, we went to a Battleborn event this last weekend, and only a few people showed up, so the store was generous enough to just offload a bunch of promos because they can just distribute them as they see fit. So these look pretty cool. Some spoilers in here. Murder is being reprinted in M19. Not a big surprise to anyone. This is going to be one of the promos. They have this really cool, like, dark shaded text box, and they almost have
It's the Jace text box.
The Jace text box?
Yeah, the spellbook Jace.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yep, exactly. The other two are Elvish Rejuvenator and Militia Bugler. Let's start with Bugler. 2 and a white for Human Soldier, 2/3 Vigilance. When it enters the battlefield, look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature card with power 2 or less from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom in a random order. Card's got a lot to offer. There are a lot of modern players thinking about whether or not this could see play in, like, some of the company decks and potentially in humans. Now, it is power 2 or less, similar to, like, Revelark. So you can grab, like, a body double, for example, if, you know, that's where you wanted to go with this. But I don't know. What do you think of this one, Daryl?
I just want to get Medley Mages.
Yeah?
Yeah. Card's cool. I don't think it's going to see a lot of play. So, where I would like to be playing this is in, like, Death and Taxes in Legacy.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Everything but Flicker Wisp has 2 or less power.
Yeah. Yeah, it almost seems like, in some cases, like, converted mana cost 2 or less would actually be better.
Would have been safer, yeah. It's also very good in EDH. Because you just have, like, Karmic Guide, Sadistic Hypnotist, Ascetic Slime, stuff like that. So this is very good in EDH creature decks.
Now, it's a smaller scope than Collected Company looks at, and it's an even greater limitation, too. So there's a much greater chance that you're going to totally brick on this. I mean, think about how many times you brick with Coco, and you're looking at 6 cards.
Yeah.
But this guy could just be a 3-mana 2/3 Vigilance, which really, stat-wise, is not all that embarrassing.
No,
he's a human too, so he's gonna.
It's playable.
I could see, like, maybe a 1 of in humans, but I don't think it really has a lot to offer the deck that needs.
No, I think this is definitely a commander card, and maybe you could convince me that it might be a 1 of in death deck as in Legacy.
How about Vizier Company?
Maybe a 1 of. Just like I've seen people talking about it to extend your company a little bit.
Yeah.
If you've got nothing better to hit, you can try again and put it in your hand.
Yeah. I think it would be, like, the same kind of slot where we've got those, like, kind of 1 of Renegade Ralliers, which that seems a little better. That, like, is, like, check your graveyard if you've got one of those things put into play.
Right, but it's also, you had to break a fetch land or something.
Sure, yeah.
Whereas, like, this has no condition.
That's fair. And it goes in your hand, though, so it's quite a bit slower. But I don't know. It remains to be seen. I'm sure someone's going to try it, but I don't expect it to be a part of that deck.
No.
Okay, the last one, though, I'm most excited about. This one is extremely powerful, and I think it's a lot of people are overlooking this. 2 and a green for a 1/1 elf druid. Okay, you're asking yourself, does it go in the elf deck? No, it doesn't. Because what it does is, enters the battlefield, look at the top 5 cards of your library, put a land card, any land, from among them onto the battlefield tapped, and put the rest on the bottom of your library.
Oh, I didn't read that any land part. That's pretty good.
Land, yeah. we've got so many different versions of this card in, like, Civic Wayfinder and, like, what is it, the Forest Elves or Wood Elves. This is the only one that ever puts a land of any type into play tapped. It not only searches for it, it puts it into play tapped. Now, it's top five, but that's pretty damn good.
That's not a search. That's something else. But, like, yeah, that's pretty good. Like, put your Malakuts into play. You know.
Yeah. I mean, this guy ramps you permanently. Like, I could see this in like a Tron deck. Like, it's possible that just having a 1/1 beater is enough to be a good distraction and, like, you know, put some kind of clock into effect.
So, I mean, I'm definitely telling you where this card's gonna have a dollar price tag, 100%. You know why?
Why?
Because people are going to cast this card EDH.
Would you say a dollar price tag? You think it's only gonna be worth a dollar because of that?
Yeah, it's a common. No, yeah. not this specific print.
Oh, okay.
But like the general Elvish Rejuvenator print that is a common.
Oh yeah.
I think we'll have a dollar price tag.
Yeah, for sure. I don't see why you wouldn't play this in EDH. I mean, it's most often gonna just get you any like basic land or, you know, non basic like color fixing land. But when it gets the Nykthos, yeah, you're gonna remember why you play this card.
Or your flash land or some dumb crap like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's very cool. And then finally, we are seeing, well, not finally, I guess, but they're showing the standard showdown promo basics that you get, which are last season we had the Rebecca Guay basics, the foils, that were beautiful. Now we're getting some from a new artist that I've never heard of before, and it's very hard to read. Elena Danner? Am I getting that right? Elena Danner?
Yeah.
But point being, these look fantastic. They are really, really cool. Super realistic looking. The island is my personal favorite, but all five of them.
Whew. All very nice, yeah.
Like to copy those. Okay. At the bottom of the article, we're going to just kind of skip past the intro deck inclusions because there's nothing too exciting in there. Lots of commons and some like sort of bulk rares like Shivan Dragon and stuff in there. A few random cards thrown in, just like with little explanation of why and how. But we have Patient Rebuilding is really interesting if you're an EDH player. It's blue for an enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, target opponent puts the top three cards of their library into their graveyard. Then you draw a card for each land card put in the graveyard this way.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild, isn't it? You're probably going to draw, on average, one card each time you do that. And when you draw three, it's going to feel really good.
Yep, and then when you draw zero, you're going to want to throw your deck across the room.
Well, it happens.
All right, so there are a few more cards that we do want to look at.
Yeah, talk to us, Joe.
There's the new Green Planeswalker.
Yeah, Vivian. Where did that come from exactly?
I'm not sure. I think it's intro deck.
It's not in this article, that's the thing. But I have seen it floating around the internet today.
So I feel like it's in intro deck because it's got a spell that has its name on it, like most of the intro decks have. Like, they're like, they'll have, like, Chandra's blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
and tutor for the Chandra Planeswalker.
Yep.
But this one doesn't tutor for Vivian, so it might not be. They might just be cards in the set. Vivian Reed. 5 mana, 3 green-green for 5 loyalty, legendary Planeswalker Vivian. Look at the top 4 cards of your library. You may reveal a creature or land card from among them and put them into your hand. Put the rest of the bottom in a random order. That's the +1. -3 is destroy target artifact, enchantment, or creature with flying. And -8 is you get an emblem with creatures you control, gain +2/+2, have vigilance, trample, and indestructible.
Yeah.
So, this card's really good. Like it feels very intro-decky, because like it focuses on creatures and lands. And
yeah, and it looks like it too.
It does all the things that green does very well, but this card's just pretty good. Like, just like you plus it 3 times and you get this like unbeatable emblem. And it like lets you draw creatures and lands. Like, mm-hmm. This seems, and then when you need some like pinch removal for something crazy, you have it. This card is really good.
Yeah, it reminds me of the green white 5 mana Ajani that has a similar +1 where you look at the top cards of your library, basically put a creature.
Ajani, Mentor of Heroes.
Yeah, but that card had like a second ability that was really lackluster. It put +1/+1 counters on your creatures.
It was a plus.
Okay, so it was 2 pluses, right? But this one is like, it's got the like the most relevant part of that Ajani plus like a super relevant like utility removal spell.
Yeah,
artifact and
the ultimate is just way better.
Yeah.
Gain 100 life, not as good as your creatures. Your creatures beat the garbage out of your opponent. And then she has an invocation. 5 green, green, sorcery. Look at the top 7 cards in your library. You may put a creature card from among them onto the battlefield and the rest on the bottom in a random order. When a creature is put onto the battlefield this way, it deals damage equal to its power to a creature target opponent controls. So find a creature, fight one of your opponent's creatures.
Yeah. Cool.
Those cards are all pretty sweet. The Gigantosaurus makes me smile. Just green, 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 10-10, dinosaur.
You know, we've gotten to the point where it's like, it doesn't really matter the amount of mana you're paying for something based on its power and toughness, but it really is more relevant, like, what types of, like, keywords it has on it. Like, if it has hexproof and it's that, like, clearly that's a no, right? But if you're paying 5 mana for a 10-10 creature that has nothing else, it's just totally vanilla, it's like, yeah, you can pay 1 mana for Path to Exile. I think we're starting to realize that the pure stats don't really add up to, like, the cost commitment.
And so there are 3 more cards that I do want to talk about. I don't know which one of these are buy a box promos, which one aren't, so you can feel free to tell me. The first one I want to talk about, I cannot read... Infernal Judgment, single black instant, exile target colorless creature, you gain life equal to its power.
Yeah, man.
This is going to see sideboard play in Modern.
Yeah, that's really good against Affinity. When you've suited up with the Cranial Plating, you're getting like 12 life.
Yeah, it's good against Cranial Plating. It's good against Eldrazi.
Yeah, like Wormcoil, Ugin.
Wormcoil, not Ugin, because Ugin is not a creature.
Ulamog, I'm sorry, Ulamog.
Yes, that's a very good answer to Ulamog.
Yeah.
Just very good answer to all the colorless creatures that are randomly can bop about. I don't know if it's better than Ceremonious Protection.
Yeah, that's my concern too. Like, if I'm playing this card, I'm in blue, right? And I've got that slot committed to Ceremonious Protection already. I don't know that I can put too narrow... cards like that in here.
Yeah, I mean, if Eldrazi Tron or Eldrazi and Taxes or Eldrazi and X is clearly better than, like, Mono Green Tron, like, if there's no 1-2-7 Tron, then you can actually just play that card instead. You can play the black one, because you're mostly going to be dealing with Eldrazi creatures, and it also hits Affinity. So, like, it's kind of 6 1/2 dozen the other. You have to, you know, pick your poison here.
Yeah.
The next one, I feel like this has to be a buy box promo. It's too splashy to not be. And that's Apex of Power. 7 red, red, red for a sorcery. Exile the top 7 cards of your library. Until end of turn, you may cast non-land cards this way. Or exile this way. If this spell is cast from your hand, add 10 mana of any one color.
Oh, if that spell was cast from your hand.
Yes. So I definitely read this the wrong way the first time.
Yeah.
And thought it was the most broken thing on the planet. Because I was just like, okay, so you cast this. You get 7 free cards.
Yeah.
You play spells from your hand and get a bazillion free mana.
That's what I thought,
too. And then cast the other 7 free cards. Yeah, no. This was definitely... The first time I read this, I was like, well, this is just play stupid games, win stupid prizes. Like, this is the dumbest card ever. Yeah. And I don't know why it exists, but I'm in. All right. I will totally be down for playing this card. It's still super sweet in EDH, but like...
Yeah. I think that card's just in the set. That's not the buy a box promo.
Okay.
Now
we're going to get to the buy a box promo.
That's coming up.
Going to tilt both of us into nothingness. Are you ready?
Before we do that, though, can I just ask, and just, this might be a one-word answer, is that card you just read... a player in Storm sideboards. If you're not up against a counterspell deck, you can get to 7 mana, or what is it, 10 mana?
Yeah.
10 mana? I suppose you can get to 10 mana on, like, turn 5 with some rituals.
And you get 10 more mana? No. No.
No, you don't think so?
No, not at all. I don't think so.
Alright.
So, like, I actually want to play that card against the counterspell decks. Because, like, you distract them with, like, gifts and stuff, and then you have this, like, random one of... like, extra haymaker.
Yeah.
Alright.
Okay.
Are we ready for this card that is going to tilt every standard player for the rest of forever?
Yeah, let's keep it pretty short, though, because we're almost at time here. But yes, buy a box promo. This is the unique BioBox promo. Yeah, so just like the last one, we had the Fire Seeker and Sun Song. This is presumably the same plan, where you have to buy a box to get this card. It does not appear in the set or anywhere else.
Feel better, because I thought there were multiple buy a box promos, which was going to drive me nuts.
No, this is the one.
Excellent. Okay, so this is dumb. Nexus of Fate, 5 blue-blue, instant. Take an extra turn after this one. If Nexus of Fate would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, reveal Nexus of Fate and shuffle it into its owner's library instead.
Yeah. And I think we can confirm that this is officially unique to BioBox and not in the set, because the set number is 306 out of 280, and it is Mythic BioBox on the bottom of the card.
Yes.
So this is a super unique effect in that it's an instant. We don't have many of these as an instant. And specifically some that don't like straight up exile themselves from the game after they get played. This one just goes back in your damn deck.
I don't think there is an instant time walk to start with.
No, so I don't think so.
So let's start there.
Okay.
This is going to go into the blue-white control deck instead.
You think so?
And people are going to be very sad about it.
Yeah.
Because it's going to let the blue-white no-win condition control deck never deck out. Like, you never have to worry about decking out again now. Because unless they can exile, put like, unless they can create a replacement effect that will exile your graveyard, like a Rest in Peace style effect, this card will always just get shuffled back in your library. If they counter it, it gets shuffled back in your library. You can get to the point where this is the only card in your deck, and you ultimate it to Teferi, you take an extra turn and exile your opponent's permanent, and you just keep doing that. So now the question is, like, you have to get to a point where you can discard this when you don't want to take an extra turn, after you've exiled your opponent's whole board.
Remember, folks, limited supply. You can only get it if you buy a box.
Yeah.
I mean, this the problem is clear here.
They're going to sell so many boxes because of this card.
Yeah.
Granted, I don't think I've played more than one of this in my blue-white control deck in Sanders. But, like,
still.
This card is real dumb.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's time walks. Because, like, you can do this, like, it's like, and it feels like a futile fight if you're like another control deck, because they just hold it in their hand. They get to 7 mana. You try and do something impactful. It happens. They cast this. They take 2 turns and shuffle it back in their deck. And if they cast this after you try to do something impactful and you have the mana left around just to counter it, it just gets shuffled back in their deck, and then they untap when you mean tapped out.
Yeah.
It just feels like such an uphill battle.
We've already talked about the blue-white control decks, like, putting their Teferis back into their deck so that they don't mill themselves to death. With this, I mean, this obviously does it on its own, but if you're in that mode, and granted a lot of things have to go right to get there, you've got Nexus of Fate and a Teferi in play, you win the game just by exiling their permanents.
Yeah.
Because you're going to be taking infinite turns in a row.
Right, so the problem is that they have to have an outlet to make sure they can discard. Otherwise, they can just spin their Teferi. Yeah.
You just play it. What do you mean? Like,
they never take a turn. So you exile their whole board, but that doesn't do anything. You have to be able to...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to be able to kill them. That's the key. Yeah,
that's a good point.
So, like, you can play one of these to be able to exile their whole board, spin your Teferi back in so you don't have to cast this on your extra turn.
Yeah.
And then, like, whenever your opponent starts to build a board, you just, like, Teferi, cast this, keep casting it, and exile their board, and then spin your Teferi.
Right, right. Yeah, so thank God this shuffles in when it's put into a graveyard from anywhere, because it is not effectively Torrential Gearhulkable. Now, you can Torrential Gearhulk in response to that trigger, but that's a whole whopping 13 mana. It's not what?
It's not a trigger, it's a replacement.
Oh, it is, okay.
Like resolving Green Sun Zenith. When you resolve Green Sun Zenith, it just goes back in your deck.
Oh, it just says instead, right. Okay, yeah. Good. So they're not that you're going to get to 13 mana to do that anyway, but we're safe from that. If this was even a possibility where you can mill it into your yard and then Torrential Gearhulk take an extra turn, we'd be we'd be looking at some issues. Yeah. I think this is probably gonna do it for these BioBox promos. If this goes the way we expect it to go, where it's only available in limited supply, this is gonna cause like the most outrage from players that we've seen in a long time.
This card, every EDH player wants one of these.
Yeah.
On top of a lot of standard players that are playing blue light control. So this is bad. Yeah. This is gonna be really bad.
But let me read this announcement, because I think we should just like hold judgment until until we get to this. So he says, as you might have read, we're continuing both the pre-release pickup and the unique buy box promo card promotions. We're not here to discuss the community response to the promo at this time. Check out Weekly MTG on twitch.tv/magic on Thursday at 2 p.m. Pacific time for some of that discussion. Excuse me. Today we're just here to show you the card Nexus of Fate. So there's really no explanation of how this is going to work out and how it's going to play in. If it goes like Sunspeaker and Sunsong Firespeaker, it's legal in standard, which I don't expect this not to be.
Yeah.
And then it's also only available on top of the boxes. But we aren't given that information yet, and it sounds like they're kind of like expecting some backlash on this one. So they're like, hold on, let us explain. So let's wait until next week to really dig into whether or not Wizards has lost their damn mind.
Yeah, I mean, they have. If this is limited supply, it can only be gotten by buying a box. Like, they've lost their minds. Because people want this card. Every commander player that plays blue deck wants this card. A lot of standard control players want this card. Like, they have officially created a situation where they are going to move product because people want this card if they don't get given to the stores and the stores can just sell them. Like, that's kind of like, but the stores don't want to sell them because they just want people to buy boxes.
Yeah.
So like, it's like this big circle. This is bad. This is like a card that's good enough to be wanted and it's bad. Like, we're in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, they have to be really careful with this stuff. Even if it's fringe playable and constructed, it's like got potential to just get out of hand. And this one, I think, is beyond fringe playable and constructed. I think this is this has potential to be a necessary inclusion in those blue white control decks as a one off, but still. And then even has options in modern. Like, I'm seeing Taking Turns players excited for this one, and I'm seeing commander players wanting in, potentially even legacy. Who knows? So if it sees multi-format play, whoa, this is like a reserved list card that they just printed.
Yeah, it's bad. It's real bad. Like, it's doing poorly.
Okay, well, let's wait until next week. We'll catch up with the Thursday announcement on Twitch, and we will find out some more about that before we lose our shit. Anyways, thanks for listening.
Take it easy, everybody.
Talk to you next time. Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of mtgcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website, and if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.